So welcome back to Lungcast, the monthly respiratory health podcast series from the American Lung Association and medical news site, hcplive.com. I'm your host, Dr. Albert Rizzo, Chief Medical Officer for the American Lung Association. Before we introduce our guest today, just a reminder that Lungcast is available on all your favorite streaming platforms. Subscribe to @Lungcast on YouTube to get new and archived episodes, as well as interview segments and episode highlights as they come out. A link to the show page, as well as the American Lung Association and HCP Live homepages for Lungcast, can be found in each episode description. And for those of you who prefer a podcast, you can subscribe to Lungcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and your favorite listening platforms. You can also register for more respiratory news and hot insights at both lung.org and hcplive.com. Now, today's discussion is a bit unique. We're going to be talking to a patient and her husband, as well as a specialist in asthma and immunology regarding a condition known as aspirin exacerbated respiratory disease, or AERD, also known as Sampler's triad. From our specialist, we'll learn what the triad is, how common it is, and some discussion of its mechanism. We're also going to then hear from a patient advocate regarding her experience in dealing with this condition. Like other rare or atypical conditions, or simply conditions that are not at the top of mind of the physician, patients with these conditions often have delay in the appropriate diagnosis being made, which can lead to frustration, physician hopping, and at times not achieving full therapeutic benefit. This can certainly impact the quality of life of these patients. After our patient, and before we close out the discussion, we'll also hear from her husband, who will give us the voice of the partner and caregiver of a patient with this condition. To first give our expert view, we have with us Dr. Mitchell Grayson. He's board-certified diplomat of the American Board of Allergy and Immunology, and an active fellow of the American Academy of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, and the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. Dr. Grayson is also on the board of directors of the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, and a member of the Scientific Advisory Committee of the American Lung Association. Dr. Grayson has served on numerous grant review study sections for the National Institutes of Health, as well as being on several editorial boards for allergy and immunology journals. Currently, Dr. Grayson serves as editor-in-chief for the Annals of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology. I could think of no better person to lend his expertise to today's discussion. Thank you very much for being with us today, Dr. Grayson.
Dr. Rizzo, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to our discussion.
Great. So as I mentioned, could you please describe Sampler's triad, maybe talk about the prevalence, thinking about its mechanisms, and how often it presents the clinician? Because later on, we're then going to hear from our patient advocate, and I would like then to go into more discussion of the treatment.
Sure. So Sampler's triad, as it sounds, or aspirin exacerbated respiratory disease, consists of three main things. So it's asthma, chronic rhinosinusitis, which is basically nasal symptoms and sinus symptoms, and nasal polyposis, that's nasal tissue growth polyps in the nose. It is a disease or a collection of diseases, if you will, that really appears in adulthood. It's not something we tend to see in kids. It's very rare. That doesn't mean it can't be, but it's primarily in adults. And it tends to sort of start to developing around the 30-year age range, when people get in their 30s or so. Usually it starts with sort of having nasal symptoms or rhinitis, and then it goes on to have asthma that's usually pretty difficult to control and can be quite severe. And patients that have the Sampler's triad, or AERD, often require surgeries for the nasal polyps as well. In general, we see AERD in about 7% of adults that have asthma. But if you looked at adults that had severe asthma, it's really about twice that, about 14%. And if you were to take sort of all comers with chronic rhinosinusitis, so that's the nasal and sinus disease with nasal polyps, about 16% of them would actually have AERD, or this aspirin exacerbated respiratory disease. In terms of what it actually is, I would let the patient sort of tell you a little bit what she's experienced. But in general, these people have sort of severe asthma, severe nasal and sinus issues. If they happen to take aspirin or a COX-1, so there's different types of enzymes called COX-1 and COX-2 that people use. And COX-1 is sort of aspirin, ibuprofen, those kind of medications. If they take one of those, they can have symptoms within 20 minutes to 3 hours afterwards that can lead to a very severe asthma attack, very severe sinus situations and well as well. Not usually fatal, but they could be fatal as well. And so that's really sort of the disease in terms of what happens and how that develops. Well, it's related to this overproduction of these mediators called leukotrienes. At least we believe that's what it is. And so you get elevated levels of leukotrienes, and these COX-1 inhibitors like aspirin actually cause some shunting and increase the amount of leukotrienes. There's also a reduction in sort of things that block the leukotrienes, prostacyclins, lipoxins, things like that. And that's why we believe this is what leads to this aspirin-exacerbated respiratory disease. I could talk a little bit later about treatment. We won't get into that right at this point, but that's sort of what drives it. One interesting thing I would put out there, and I don't know if your patient here has had the similar symptoms, but often there's been studies that have shown that up to about 80% of people that have AERD actually have symptoms when they have alcoholic beverages as well. That can actually lead to a worsening of their nasal symptoms and things like that, which is kind of an interesting correlation.
Well, that certainly is a great background to get us started. So now I'd like to turn to our patient, the patient's voice on this condition. And we have our patient advocate, Rhonda Nelson. She's here with her husband, Wayne Nelson. Rhonda Nelson is a passionate advocate for those who are suffering from AERD. She's spreading awareness and empowering them to find the treatment they need. She serves on the executive board with the Asthma and Allergy Network and speaks nationally. In addition, she is a voice in the foster care system and serves on the Foster Care Review Board, advocating for children, adoptive and biological parents, as well as encouraging women to reinvent themselves in different stages of their life. Now, this varied background and her marriage prompted her to author the book, A Different Life, in which she pulls back the curtain on celebrity life on the road with her husband, Wayne Nelson, who is an international recording artist with the Little River Band. I want to thank you both for being here today.
Our pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
So, Rhonda, let's start out with maybe telling us what were the symptoms, how did they first emerge when you were suggested to possibly have AERD?
So in 2000, I initially started out with what I thought was a basic cold. Because I wasn't in my hometown at that time, I also thought this possibly could be seasonal allergies just from the area that I was in. However, upon returning home, the symptoms lingered and they continued to get worse and worse and worse. Multiple visits to various doctors proved to be to not shed any light on what was going on, but we knew something was going on because this was lingering. And I really struggled to find a physician that would understand or could understand what my situation was, because at the time there were many physicians that weren't cued in to looking for an atypical disease such as AERD as a primary diagnosis.
How long from that year 2000 till you were ultimately diagnosed, would you say?
So the process was a little over 2 years. In 2002, we were living in North Carolina, and I was referred to an allergist. After he heard about my journey that had been going on for the previous 2 years, he immediately recognized the possibility of me having AERD. And ironically, he had just returned to North Carolina from Denver and National Jewish, where he had been in a conference that had a heavy focus on AERD. So receiving this diagnosis meant that we could finally get on a path of meds that would really allow me to have control of the disease and for it to be well maintained.
Very good. And is it after this experience that you decided to become a patient advocate for this condition and work with the Asthma and Allergy Network?
One way to create change and awareness is by working with a national organization, and that's why I became involved with AAN. But I also knew that I wanted to be an advocate for AERD because I knew throughout my whole entire journey that I couldn't be the only person that one had AERD, two was struggling to get a diagnosis with AERD, and three, to find physicians who were well acquainted with the disease and with the protocol that would allow me to have a well-maintained disease.
So it sounds like, you know, the impact of this delayed diagnosis was significant in your case. And luckily you found a physician at the right time who had been to the right conference to get you on a good regimen. And since that time, have things been able to be stabilized a bit?
Absolutely. You know, it's taken a while, but over the last 22 years, there have been advancements with medications and treatments. And so, you know, I will say in the beginning, I was maintained. As the years have transpired and more medications have become available to us patients, I would consider myself very well maintained at this point. But, you know, it was often very scary when we would be on the road with Wayne doing shows all across the country. One of the very first things we would look at was where the nearest hospital and ER was in case that I would have a random attack or flare up. And more than once that did occur. And we got acquainted with many ERs throughout the country.
The preparation is key. That's
absolutely
great.
Absolutely.
And anybody with a lung condition, that's great.
Yeah.
So let me switch back to Dr. Grayson for a minute to talk a little bit more about the therapy and also talk about a little bit more in general as far as asthma. We know that asthma is now described as having different phenotypes, allergic, eosinophilic, T2, non-T2, and on and on. Can you give us an understanding if this categorization is pretty accurate? And do you feel that the AERD is included in these terms?
Yeah, so that's a loaded question there. So I do think that the T2 high, T2 low, in general for asthma does play a role and is important. And so that's, you know, whether there's TH2, IL-4, IL-5, IL-13 is the T2 high kind of model, IL-17, T2 low kind of model. The problem with AERD is it doesn't quite fit into that definition from a mechanistic standpoint. So when we're talking about, you know, what is driving the disease, it tends to be more of the leukotriene, which are associated with sort of the T2 model. And when we talk about therapy, actually treating for T2 diseases will work. So it fits within that context, but the actual mechanism of why you have the sensitivity to the COX-1 inhibitors and stuff like that does not fit with a true T1 or T2 high, T2 low kind of model. I think that's kind of the difference. When we think about asthma more broadly, we tend to think of it in terms of allergic or non-allergic and response to things in the environment. So in that sense, it is similar that you would have the response to something like aspirin. But people that have AERD have severe disease sort of at baseline, even without taking an aspirin. It's just that if they take something like an aspirin, it very quickly leads to a very severe exacerbation. But often their disease is pretty severe just to begin with at baseline.
In preparing for this interview, I was looking up aspirin desensitization. Now, do you find that that's something, or an aspirin challenge, are these things that are done in these patients?
Yeah, so there's, when we talk about diagnosing these patients, oftentimes if you have nasal polyps, you have chronic rhinosinusitis, and you have asthma, it pretty much in itself makes the diagnosis of having AERD. But, you know, some people have, and they can tell you they took an aspirin and their symptoms got worse, but some people don't take aspirins and they would never know. And so they'll have that. And it, in that case, it can be helpful to do a challenge with an aspirin, which we can do, and then see if their asthma gets worse. To be fair, if we're going to do that, usually we put people on a leukotriene blocker first, just to lessen the reaction so that it's more nasal upper airway stuff and less that we have a horrible asthma exacerbation in the clinic when we give them aspirin.
Right.
As far as the desensitization, that gets sort of to the idea of treatment. What's the best way to treat AERD? And it's really, so the first piece of it is you want to treat the asthma, you want to treat the rhinosinusitis. So we do normal asthma treatments and things like that as well, inhaled steroids and long-acting bronchodilators, the usual kind of stuff. But for these patients, they respond very well to biologics. So we're talking about in primarily omalizumab, which is anti-IgE, mepolizumab, anti-IL-5, or dupilumab, anti-IL-4, IL-13. And actually, dupilumab tends to be the one of the biologics that seems to work the best. And those work to both get rid of the nasal polyps and also control the asthma. But if it works just as well as to do an aspirin desensitization. So this is an interesting thing where we actually give increasing doses of aspirin, start very low, give increasing doses of aspirin, and patients will actually have a reaction. Their lung function will drop. We can start at that dose and sort of move up, and we try to get them to the point that we're basically giving them sort of two aspirins twice a day. We can sometimes back off a little bit from that and keep them on that. And if we do that, we find that number one, they can tolerate aspirin. Number two, their airway disease gets much better, and it is much improved, as well as so both the upper and the lower airway disease. The only problem with aspirin desensitization is the fact that it doesn't make the polyps go away. So in general, if someone has polyps, we need to do surgery first, get rid of the polyps, then do aspirin desensitization, but then the polyps will not likely regrow if they stay on the aspirin.
Got
Whereas the biologics can make the polyps go away. So that's kind of a way to decide whether you want to do biologics or aspirin desensitization is, if you're not going to do surgery, then the only way you're going to get rid of those polyps is probably through the biologics.
it. Okay. So today we're mainly talking about aspirin sensitivity, but I'm curious, we know there are many other foods and additives that can trigger asthma. In fact, you mentioned some people, it's not aspirin necessarily that triggers their symptoms. Can you give like a high level view and maybe some resources for patients and physicians both who feel they have a patient with poorly controlled asthma that might be related to an unsuspected exposure.
Yeah, so asthma in general, not necessarily asthma with chronic rhinosinusitis and nasal polyps, but asthma in general can be exacerbated by many environmental exposures, pollution, strong scents, things like that. And so to try and understand what all those triggers are is an important piece of discussing care with your provider. In terms of what's available out there for people to look at and understand, I mean, the American Lung Association has a not to be self-serving here, but does have a wonderful website with all kinds of information about clean air as well as the impact on asthma. Other sites that you can go to as well. Actually, there's several federal government sites. So the EPA has good information on it. The National Heart, Lung, Blood Institute have a website as well that has good information about these environmental exposures. And then the Asthma and Allergy Foundation has information about it and AAN also. So any of these patient organizations really do have a good list of things that you could potentially look out for and consider when you're evaluating a patient with asthma or if you're a patient with asthma, thinking about, am I being exposed to things that are actually making my asthma worse that I could do something about in sort of cleaning up my environment and make my asthma better?
Got it. Now, aside from the aspirin challenge, do these patients respond to the other normal testing for asthma, like allergy testing, bronchoprovocation studies, FeNO, IgE? Are those all worth measuring in these patients as well?
So in general, they're really not. You can do them if you want, but in general, it's not. It's really is sort of the aspirin or the COX-1 inhibitor that's the problem. It's important to note that COX-2 inhibitors, that if they're pure COX-2 inhibitors, they're tolerated. Salicylates are often tolerated. It really is the COX-1 aspirin, ibuprofen kind of drugs that cause the problems.
Okay, thank you. So, Rhonda, I want to come back to you. And having heard what Dr. Grayson said, maybe tell us if your experience has been about the same, and tell us how managing your asthma has been going on over the years. You've told us about being prepared by emergency rooms, but on a day-to-day basis, what do you do for your ARDA?
Well,
AURD, I'm sorry.
thanks to, my amazing medical team, my daily meds, which do include a biologic now, keep me very well maintained. Throughout my 22-year journey, I've obviously researched medicinal and non-medicinal therapies, and I have incorporated some of those things like acupuncture, a low omega-3 diet, infrared sauna therapy, red light therapy, and supplements along with regular exercise. But I do want to say to all your listeners, it is very important when you're looking at those kind of non-medicinal therapies, that you discuss all of them, regardless of how insignificant they might seem, with your doctor. And which is something that I have done and continue to do. It's just because you just can't, this disease, there's some quirkiness with it, and sometimes, you just don't know how maybe a supplement is going to play with a biologic for a very simple explanation or something like that. So while I do all of these things, and I do believe that these things have been helpful for me and help in addition to my prescription meds to keep me maintained, I just can't stress enough about talking about these therapies with your physician.
Right. Now, I wanted to switch over before we close and get the voice of the caregiver. Wayne, can you please talk about your experience serving as a partner and caregiver and how you've helped support Rhonda over these years?
Listening to the history that the doctors described and the aspirin therapy and are there other triggers, whatever. This was such a mystery when we kept going to an allergist and nothing changed. And then suddenly the man said the Santer's triad and everything started to fall in place. But even then, I'll describe one part of our touring experience. This is very obviously focused on the music business, but we travel in a bus and there's nine guys on a bus trying to sleep. One of her symptoms was you could set your clock to 3:30 in the morning. She would start sneezing and she would have gut sneezes twice, so bad that they actually threw her back out and caused pain like that. They would go on for about 2, 3 hours. We didn't know how to control them. We didn't know what was going on. And then she's exhausted. Well, she would go to the front of the bus because she didn't want to wake anybody else up. I say all of that because the main thing here is that it's been such a mystery. The person who's watching their loved one turn blue, and you have to go to the emergency room and you have to pound on the glass at 4 in the morning to get somebody to come and take care of it. You've got to have so much patience and so much understanding, and you've got to keep telling people all day long, she looks fine. She's got a disease. It doesn't manifest as a surgery or a broken limb or something like that. And it is absolutely exhausting. And we got to the point where there were days when she literally couldn't get up. You just can't give up. And you have to be so prepared. I slept in my clothes many nights because you didn't know if you were going to head to the emergency room. And our situation is unique with the music industry, but from the numbers that the doctor told us, that a lot of people, we knew that, we knew intuitively that there were a lot of people out there thinking they had allergies when they had this other thing and they just kept being misdiagnosed. When we've gone to Washington, D.C., we've met mothers who don't have the ability to take care of their kids during the day because they're exhausted. This thing needs so much attention. And for the people that are out there dealing with it in almost, I don't want to say ignorance, they're just uneducated about what it could be. It's tragic for those people. And I just have to say, don't give up. Keep looking for that thing that helps you find your way through it. Because when you do find the thing that controls it, life just changes for everybody.
Yeah, no question. The patient voice we have found at the Lung Association is so important. I mean, patients will listen to doctors, but they also listen to patients sometimes more closely because their experiences is so similar. So before we close out, Rhonda or Wayne, anything else from a patient advocacy standpoint you'd like to say that we haven't touched on? And first of all, I thank you for the volunteerism that you do in respect to this disease.
Thank you. There is one thing that in hindsight, I wish I had done, and I'm a big advocate for this, for current patients. I wish I'd kept a medical journal and documented my symptoms and documented what was going on while I was in that journey of getting an actual diagnosis, because I truly believe that that helps your physician or your medical team to put the pieces of the puzzle together. So I would encourage your listeners who might think that they have AERD to start documenting, you know, what their symptoms are and their journey, and to use that as a kind of a path to finding the diagnosis. The other thing I just is near and dear to my heart is, you know, there's a lot, there are new treatments out there. And I think it's important that you sit down with your physician and you hear the pros and cons of them, and then you make the decision of what is right for you and for your body. Because I feel like each patient is just different enough that what works for one patient with this disease might not work for another patient. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like it's so important that we advocate for ourselves and that we take the time to do our own research as well.
Thank you. Dr. Grayson, any closing comments?
I would just reiterate what Mrs. Nelson just said. I mean, I think be sure to tell your provider all the symptoms you're having, all the issues, what you've noticed that's changed and been different, if you can't smell, all that kind of stuff, because you're going to help them actually come up with what that actual diagnosis is. And then, as she said very eloquently, shared decision making. You need to make sure that you discuss with your provider what is best for you. There's going to be different ways of treating the disease. And so it needs to be something that you're comfortable with, and not something that you just, your provider tells you you need to do. So I think that's the important thing, is make sure you do discuss all your symptoms with your provider, and then be very proactive and a participant in making the decisions on your care.
Also, I don't want listeners to, you know, hear my particular story or stories of other people that started out with this disease 22 years ago. There is hope. Their treatments have come a long way. There are so many more physicians that know about this. We have a lot of work to do, don't get me wrong, but I do believe that, you know, there are more treatment options, and there are more physicians that know about it. So it requires a little homework, and it might require a little extra effort and work to find the physicians and the treatment, but don't give up hope, because it is out there.
And it's great to have people like yourselves raising the awareness on an ongoing basis.
Thank you.
Again, I want to thank Dr. Grayson, Rhonda, and Wayne Nelson for a pretty interesting discussion about aspirin exacerbated respiratory disease and the patient journey that it can lead to, which can be challenging. So thank you again for the time today and your volunteerism. And to our listeners, if you want to hear more regarding all things respiratory related, we have a great archive of discussions on our show feeds. Be sure to subscribe and rate at Lungcast on your preferred listening or watching platform, and visit lung.org and hcplive.com for more news and resources. Until next time, I'm Dr. Albert Rizzo, reminding you that if you can't breathe, nothing else matters.